We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 6:04 p.m. Is there anyone in the public that would like to comment regarding our closed session items? Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and adjourn to closed session. Thank you. Thank you all for waiting. We will go ahead and begin this session. We're going to go ahead and call the session open at 7:25 p.m. We had a lengthy closed session, so thanks for being patient, everyone. Okay. I'd like to ask the public at this time, is there anybody who would like to offer an invocation from the public? Okay. Seeing none, I'll go ahead. We can all please stand. Dear Lord, we thank you for another wonderful time in our district right now. We thank you for getting us through the passing of Mr. Okura. We thank you for the celebrations that we're going to have tonight. We pray that there be wisdom as we move forward in this meeting. And we thank you, dear Lord, for the students and all the hard work that they have done and the honoring that we're going to do of them today. Pray all this in your name. Amen. Amen. We can please place our hand over the heart for the flag salute. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, if we can have the roll call.
Mrs. Miranda Jimenez.
Here.
Jamaica. Mrs. Polis.
Here.
Mr. Cox.
Here.
Mr. Spence.
Here.
Ms. Manahan.
Here.
And Mrs. Kaplan.
Here.
Thank you. Okay. In closed session, it was moved by Ms. Polos and it was seconded by Mr. Cox and approved to expel student 179774, Education Code 489152, for the possession of a knife, explosive, and other dangerous object. And it was approved 3 with 2 absences on the vote. And I'm happy to say that we have the following students have completed their terms and conditions of expulsion, and it has been approved by the Board of Education to readmit to these students to the West Covina Unified School District. Mr. Cox moved it, Ms. Pulo seconded it, and we will be student number 184106, lift the expulsion and enroll at a district of residence. And student number 196254, we will lift the expulsion, enroll at West Covina High School. That was a 3 yes and 2 absent on that as well. Okay, on both of them. Also in closed session, under item B, personnel, public employee discipline, dismissal, release, transfer appointment, the board, 3 in favor, 2 absent, 2 approved, the administration's recommendation to dismiss a classified employee. Okay. So those were our items in closed session. Okay, we have 2 presentations. I think we should start with the high school. So I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Kaplan to honor Edgewood.
Dominated the competition. I remember thinking about halfway through the luncheon.
map, indefinitely put themselves on the map. As a team, they dominated Division III. There are four divisions. Edgewater's team had been in Division III. They also took first place in the super quiz. That was for every student and coach on that. At this time, I'd like to ask Mr. Michael and Mr. Purgatory if they'll recognize the individual achievements of the students who are here tonight.
So first of all, thank you. We're grateful that you would take this time to honor the team. They're really excited and proud to be here. And we were thrilled to have Miss Valentine in attendance on Thursday. We're like over the moon ecstatic with the success of our students. They worked extremely hard. They're all sophomores, and obviously, and they're competing against primarily seniors, some juniors. And we were in Division III last year, being a new school, and did our best. And this year, because of our scores, we moved all the way to Division I, where we'll be next year. So you don't know how many coaches and even the superintendent of LA County came up to our table personally afterwards to congratulate us and ask who we were and where we were from and how we were so successful this year. So we're thrilled. As far as recognizing the students individually, it's hard because, as you can see, they earned so many medals. They earned 60 medals overall. They really... When Ms. Valentine said that we dominated Division III, she wasn't exaggerating. I think for like the overall student, for example, they give out 9 awards for the top overall student in Division III in the different grade level divisions, and we took 7 of those 9 awards just from one school. So it was like that all the way across. They all won gold medals, multiple gold medals, as you can see by the blue ribbons that they're wearing, every single one of them. So I want to thank our whole staff. There's probably not a teacher on our staff that has not contributed in a significant way, from driving out to Pico Rivera and spending a whole day judging, like Ms. Bakshi did, from wearing our team shirts and buying team shirts, from supporting the students individually, from helping out judging, coaching. Just, we had support all the way across. And our administration, like, we couldn't ask for more support. Everything we've needed, we've gotten, and then some. So we're very grateful. And I've also been grateful this year to have Mr. Lovato on board, who has been a terrific assistant coach. And so, did you want to add anything to all my...
No, I just wanted to say that it was an enriching experience. I got to participate as a student when I was in high school, and now doing it as a coach and seeing it from this end, I could appreciate everything that my coaches went through. So the time that it takes to do this is definitely worthwhile, but it's numerous. For us as coaches, it's unbelievable the amount of time that the students put into that, and it shows in terms of their success. It was tremendous.
Thank you very much. Can you guys stand up and carry the trophy?
If we can have the students come forward so we can get photos, and I'm going to come present a certificate to the coaches. That way parents can get photos.
That'd be great. Can I say their names also?
Please, yes, absolutely.
Yes. Come on up, and I'll say your names.
Hold your head high with all that mingling.
So we got the plaque that we're holding there is for most improved school in the county.
Wow.
We gained 11,000 points of improvement. The second best was a 7,000-point gain. So.
Wow.
So our students are Eric Lamb, Russell Fahayan, Sophia Jimenez, Nico Campos, our president, Alan Aguirre, our vice president, Eric Fan. We have Annie Lynn, Sandra Wynn, and Tustin Barilli is also on our team but not present.
Congratulations, students. I'm so incredibly proud of you. That is quite an achievement. Very, very good. I would like to present to the entire team, but I'll hand it over to the coach. Outstanding achievement at the 2012 Academic Decathlon. So thank you so much. And if coaches, if you can join your students, I'm sure parents are going to want to take pictures, right? So go ahead. Again, congratulations. Two rows. You know, there's a step behind you. You can divide yourselves up, and that way we can everyone can get in the photo. Parents, if you want to go ahead and get some photos.
No.
Teachers, parents, whoever. This is what it's all about.
You can get in the background. Yay! If I lean just a little bit taller, see if she can get a mark out of you.
Thank you so much, coaches. Thank you so much, coaches and students. Again, we applaud your effort. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. And that is the true sound of Bleeding Gling. Thank you. Okay, we are going to move our order just a bit. We are going to have the student report first, and then we'll go to the transportation report because we want to support Megan in her effort to get an A on her exam tomorrow. So go ahead.
Okay, unfortunately, I don't have a report from Coronado High School tonight, but I do have Edgewood and West Covina. So for Edgewood, as you know, their academic decathlon team is amazing and moved up to Division I, so we're very, very excited for them. For academics, they just hosted their second Renaissance Rally to congratulate their students for their first semester achievements and get them ready for the new semester. And they're continuing there to build their strong relationship with their alumni association. And their fourth meeting was this past Saturday. And they're planning a homecoming February 25th from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. And they're going to have food and performances. Some speakers will be there. And they'll have tables with things from the past for the alumni to remember. And current students will be giving tours around their new campus. They also just had their winter formal, A Mad Evening in Wonderland, on February 4th, and many students were involved in their district-wide production of The Wiz, which I've been hearing nothing but good things from, so we're excited for that. And they're also having their Romeo and Juliet auditions this Thursday, and their soccer and basketball season has ended, and their swim and tennis season will begin. That's for Edgewood. For West Covina, we are continuing with our test talk, where every student is given their scores from last year, and we are able to review them and write out goals for this year, and we also take them home and present them to our families so we can discuss ways to achieve this year. Seniors are also getting their college acceptance letters, so that's pretty stressful, but it's really exciting at the same time. And we're also really, really glad to be having our first ever Kindness Week this week. It started today, and we have tons of activities. We have a handprint mural that every student can be a part of. We have a wishing tree in the middle of the quad. We're selling shirts that say, "Kindness starts with a smile." And so the students are really excited. And we just have lots of activities, and we're really glad that we could spread this message to our students and hopefully spread it, you know, throughout the city and even further. So you're all welcome to come and see what we're doing this week at lunch. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're wishing you all the best. Okay. I have a few blue cards. So we have some people in the audience that like to address the board. However, we have a transportation report. So can we take the audience members first, and then is that okay for those of you who are doing the transportation report, if you could be? Thank you. Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's go ahead and move up items from the floor, public comment. If we can please have first Caleb Pico?
Caleb.
Thank you, Caleb.
First off, I want to say thank you for allowing me to come up here and speak to you guys. I actually represent West Covina Youth Soccer. We're coming here today with some low expectations, don't really know what can be done, but just to kind of get to the point, because I know you guys, everyone's busy, probably like to get home. I represent West Covina Youth Soccer. We're the largest youth sports league here in West Covina. We serve boys, girls. We also serve mentally challenged children and adults through our TOPS soccer program. And just to, again, to get to the point, a few weeks back we had learned that half of the fields that we use for our league had been given to another league, to West Covina Youth Pony Baseball. Again, we support all the sports leagues here. Don't want to sound like, you know, we're not supporting any leagues. We want all sports to have, you know, equal representation, to have fields. However, we feel that as a league, being one of the largest sports leagues and having mutual interest with the school districts, meaning we have, you know, children in our league that are also in your schools here, and we feel that we kind of were left out of the loop and we weren't given an equal opportunity to either have the chance to say, hey, we would like to have these fields. These fields were given to, as our understanding, these fields were given to West Covina Youth Baseball, to one team. Now, we represent probably 500 to 600 kids. There's going to be a team of 12 baseball players who are now going to play over here on Edgewood, which we've been using these fields for well over 30 years. And we appreciate the fact that the school districts and the various schools allow us to use these fields. And, again, we feel that we share in the fields. We, you know, make sure the fields stay clean. We share in the facilities that we have. We let the schools use our goals. We let the schools use the paint to paint the different fields. Happy to do that. Again, it's kind of a mutual thing that we have with you guys. And we just kind of feel, again, we don't have expectations that you guys are going to yank the permits and give them to us, but we just really, as a league, wanted to voice our concerns that we were left out of the loop and not really given that equal opportunity to say, hey, you know, if you're going to go ahead and give these fields to another league, which, you know, that might be their right, then give us the chance to come and say, you know, we've been using these fields for so long, and to take half our fields away from us at the very beginning of our league, the spring schedule, it's going to cause us to now scramble. And, again, it's something we can do. Can we scramble? Yes, we can make do. But we just kind of feel like we were left out of the loop, and it wasn't really, I don't want to say something that was fair, but just something that it shouldn't have come down to this, especially to a league such as ours that's been around for so long, that represents, you know, mutual interest in the city of West Covina with the students here. And, again, we appreciate everything the city and the school district does for the league, but we just kind of wanted to voice our concern on that. So appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. We have.
I'm a little confused because who told you that the fields were switched? Because the city, I thought we had an agreement with the city.
It's our,
the city schedules the fields. Is that right?
Unfortunately, our president, Art Bayin, is not here. But we have to come to you guys as a league and ask for use permits of the field.
I thought there was a master schedule.
Isn't there a master
city?
Youth council?
A
youth sports council with
coordinated
with the
city to make sure that everybody had fair use of the fields. That's why.
You know, again, I don't know all that, so. Don't want to say anything that's really not true. But we just know we were told that we were not allowed to use these fields over here with the Edgewood baseball field.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know. I thought there was a master youth schedule that the city worked on to coordinate stuff. That's why I'm a little confused.
What you have to do is you have to go and apply with the different schools, either the principal or the school district, to see if that field is available.
So I'm still a little confused then on the role of the The Master Youth Council, though, does a lot, does the scheduling, and then they come for us for the facility use reports, right? So they were involved in this?
They don't do the scheduling. It's done here with the site. It's been for use. We just kind of coordinate.
Then that's different than what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We don't have room for someone where else they could go. It's kind of a coordination of efforts to be able to supply as many fields as possible.
Because, well, it was my understanding that, that it was part of that. But
yeah.
I don't understand when that changed.
Yeah.
When I spoke to Ms. Baston earlier, she was also saying that they were looking at possibly using Orangewood. So that would be the closest adjacent field to make it convenient for the parents. And I just want to make sure that they know. I know I've talked to, I don't know if I've talked to any of you here in the audience because I don't.
Probably Art Bain, our president. He's just unfortunately not here tonight.
But, and I know that. Somebody had given Don's name, Eileen had given Don's name to somebody also. So I know there's been correspondence, but to know that we're trying to work it out and that Orangewood, from my understanding, is you had been talking to Art about Orangewood. So we understand that there's...
Yeah, and we appreciate, definitely, we can definitely scramble and use other fields, but we just feel that as a league that's been around here in the city of West Covina for so many years, and we understand that Edgewood is coming on as a high school, and they want to use these facilities for their, you know, their varsity teams and all that, and we're happy to support that. But the way that the field permits work out is that it blocks us from using the fields until about 6 o'clock at night, and then it blocks us off from about 8 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon on Saturdays. So it's not to say that it's impossible, but it makes it just tough and to scramble the last minute. So, again, we don't know what can be done here, but we just, as a league, wanted to voice our concern. And, again, we appreciate what you guys do for our league, and we try to, in turn, help out, you know, the schools. So we just want to voice our concern. We appreciate it. And
just as a point, currently, the previous permit for use expired at the end of December. Their current permit, when their league begins in March through July, it's Monday through Friday, 5:30 to 10 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
So they can use it Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have the three fields, just not the baseball.
It's not the baseball field, because that's going to be the Edgewood.
But see, the baseball field, the way that works out is you have two under-6 fields that go kind of in left field, and then in right field of the baseball team would be two under-12, two under-10 fields. So... I mean, it might be one field there for baseball, but the way we break down our fields, it actually takes out four fields, so it kind of cuts ours in half. So, I mean, it's there is a way to manage it, but it just kind of forces us at the last minute to scramble. And as a board, we just kind of felt like we were kind of left out of the loop to the last minute, and now we're scrambling. So, again, we don't want to come here angry or upset at anyone, but we just want to voice the concern.
We can't work this out all right now at this moment with all the details. Can this discussion be continued?
It has been.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I would like clarification then about the role that the city plays in the scheduling of the fields. Because originally, at least at one point, they were actually doing the scheduling and working with us to make sure that, you know, leagues had everything possible. And I'm confused on when that broke down then, because that's new to me. So I'd like to, if you can clarify that process and, you know, maybe it's because the city cut the people or whatever, I don't know. But, you know, I'm a little – because that was one of the ways to try to manage all the different needs in the city was to have the city involved, because there's also schools and places and parks outside of our control, obviously, that you can try to balance everything out. And so that's why I'm a little confused when that changed.
And I think the gentleman's saying the same thing. There's been ongoing conversation. I know Jeff Florio has actually met with the president. I know Gaston is meeting with me. There's been ongoing conversation.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thank you for bringing it to us. And as you said, we're going to take it further to the city so that we can make sure there's a bigger coordinated effort.
No, that's what I'm
And we plan to go to the city council meeting. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Does Julian and Jesse, do you still need to speak?
That's what I'm confused.
Or do you feel it was adequately addressed right now?
Well, I kind of wanted to speak.
Okay. So Julian Soto, are you Julian?
Yeah.
Okay. So Julian Soto.
Hello, board members.
Hello.
I'd just like to say, I'm a proud member of West Covina. I've been here my whole life and went through West Covina, lived right around the corner. And, you know, it's just a pleasure to be here again. Now that I'm a little older and Now that I'm a teacher working for Covina Valley, unfortunately, not the West Covina Unified, but tried to go there first, unfortunately. I had a multiple subject, but that's a different story. And I'm here for soccer. I have two daughters that play soccer. And growing up, I grew up in, you know, I had a single parent, my mother, who was taking care of me. And if it wasn't for soccer and the great teachers like Coach Okura, who unfortunately passed away, I did not know about that. And, you know, I see Coach Porter there and some of the other coaches and all the different people that I had a chance and opportunity to meet. Mr. Proach, who was an inspiration to me, but also having the soccer fields here, you know, being able to play soccer was important to me because it was an outlet that I had. If we were to lose these fields, I think obviously it just causes more problems for us. As a parent for myself, if I have to travel, I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, that's going to be problematic. You know, if I have to go to Edgewood and then go here, some people have 3 kids, some people, you know, have 1 kid, you know, but it's all different. You know, every family's different. And I just feel that it's important for us just to be able to have that so we can commune and meet together. If there's anything that's important that needs to be passed out, anything that the board wants us to know about, the schools, we can go ahead and get that taken care of. But if we were to have that area split, that's going to be problematic in terms of communication. You know, I just, you know, there's a lot of parents who are pretty upset, you know. You know, I grew up playing the sport, and I know we've had to go from, you know, all sorts of different fields. We've had to go from one field to another. And I'm 38. I've been playing since I was about 6 or 7 years old. And, you know, I felt like as a sport, you know, we have so many participants from the community, but we always had to feel like we had to give up some of our fields to baseball. And baseball is a great sport. I played baseball as well. You know, but I think there's a lot of families out there who feel like they need a home field of their own. And unfortunately, we haven't, you know, Edgewood's kind of been that field that we've had for the last 20 years or so, you know. So we've really bonded to that field, and we've kind of took care of the field. And as Caleb said, we let the school use some of our equipment and so forth, and we've been very respectful in whatever it is that they wanted. So, you know, a lot of parents stepped up. We have a petition here. There's about 85 signatures, and that's just within a few days that we were able to get these signatures signed. You know, we're having more dates that we're getting together for, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot more signatures. But, you know, we just want to make sure that we can kind of keep this league going, and it's important that we have a place that we can play where these kids can come together. Obviously, you guys know about the benefits that go along with team sports, the socialization. You know, there's just so many different things, and I feel that's important for these kids to have a place to play. You know, it was important to me. I feel like, and I'm giving back as a coach. I'm coaching two teams through soccer, and I think it's important for these kids just to be able to have a place that they can call their home, that they can go to instead of having to go from one field to the other all the time.
Thank you so much. Before I call on the next blue card, if the students want to go ahead and go home, because I know you all have probably homework to do, and you know you need to do your job as a student, so because this may continue to take a little longer. So let's just give them one moment to go ahead and thank you for coming, though, and thank you for joining us.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you.
Do they understand the proximity between Orangewood and Edgewood?
Oh, yes. We're going to be romantic now. It's Valentine's Day. Thank you. Just bring the candles in. Okay. Let's go ahead and move forward with Jesse. Did you need to still speak, Jesse Ramirez, or you're okay now?
Is it going to be a continuation for when you guys get back to the sports council? Is that what you're stating that you're going to be hearing from them first?
Well, I think we're going to find out exactly some of the process stuff that we thought, or at least some of us thought, was going on that isn't. So that's kind of odd. But.
Okay.
So I'll just wait.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you. And then Tony Valdez. Mr. Valdez.
I know who's going to speak. Thank you and good evening, board.
Good evening.
Mr. Spence and Mr. Cox know me. This is my second time around as a grandpa coach, and so I've been here 18 years now, so I guess I'm one of the older spokesmen here. The one thing we need to take into consideration, now when I was talking to Mr. Cox, we mentioned that this permit was based around high school sports for the use of the field, because our understanding is for West Covina Pony Baseball. And, you know, so that makes it, to me, it makes it a whole different ball game. I mean, if it's high school, it's high school. You know what? And the high school's worked well with us. I mean, we recently, the principal gave us a permit to practice somewhere when it was dark and we needed space, and they gave us a little room, and we were so appreciative of that. But if it's not for high school, then this really needs to go to another level. One of the things that they got to take in consideration when we talk about the baseball field, three fields versus one, that's fine. You have West Covina basketball that practices there on the courts while we're having our seasons. Basketball doesn't bounce on the soccer field and hurt anybody. You know, you're talking about that size of the field, the kids that be playing there, I believe, are pony-age baseball players. Those balls go flying everywhere. I mean, we would need to be quite a distance away from this field in order for the kids to be safe. So I hope they take that in consideration, because these balls can go flying on the main track while there's a soccer game, regardless whether we move the fields down to the farther end of the field, down on the, I would say, the southwest corner. Balls can still get down in that area. But to me, it's a whole principle of, you know, I've been on all the boards of all the sports, and I'm currently on the board in here. I've been on the board for West Covina baseball, West Covina soccer, you know, 15 years ago. I went and hand manicured, dug up a whole field there at Cameron by myself on one Saturday, and it was for girls softball. I was a board member of baseball, but I didn't come over and say, can I have that field, because I'm the one that created the field. I'm the one that dug it out and lined it. So, to me, it's a thing. It's just a courtesy thing. I mean, that's what I'd like you guys to review. I mean, if it's a high school thing, it's understandable. We will adjust to that. But if it's for league versus league, I think that's, you know, they should be looked a little stronger. And I appreciate what you were saying. So, that's all I'd say. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Good to see you again.
Thank you. Okay. I also have a card for Lynn Stell. Thank you, Ms. Stell.
Good evening. I'm here representing the newly formed Edgewood High School Alumni Association. And
it's only been here for 2 years.
It has been.
For just 2 years, right?
Yeah. What? Alumni? So
this Edgewood High School thing is...
Alumni? No, we just started it. Yeah. We just started it. And we're planning our first event, as you heard, on February 25th. And our goal is to bridge the gap between Edgewood Trojans and the Edgewood Lions. So that's our goal. And it's been exciting to meet some of the students. And at our homecoming, we're going to sell T-shirts, and we're going to have a barbecue, and we're going to sell food. And what I'm here tonight is to ask any of you who would like to come speak. We will have time to speak. We'd love to hear from you about what's going on with Edgewood. And
well, just to ask, would you prefer, it's probably more preferential to have perhaps a graduate of South Hills High School versus somebody that graduated from Edgewood? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, we would like Edgewood and alumni.
You would.
Loss. Are you from South Hills?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
South Hills, yeah.
But you do have two board members that
right,
are graduates.
Right. So
I understand Edgewood's the better school.
And
West Covina is a better district.
We're going to
I'm not going to say a word.
Used to the jealousy.
But the students are really excited. They're going to have their jazz band, their choir, their cheerleaders. So we're going to, and we also have a few faculty members that are going to come and speak, and we're going to recognize them. And then after we're all done, we're going to meet at the Mosaic, the one that's by the cafeteria, and we're going to rededicate it.
Okay.
And then we're going to sing the alma mater. So we're really excited. So I hope some of you can come and join us. I have some flyers if you
Thank
would
you.
Like. Some flyers.
Is Larry Lear involved with this?
He is.
Thank
he
you.
He has to work that day because he teaches at the...
You know, I appreciate what you're doing. I'm going to be out of town, unfortunately, because my mom has been on me about this. But I'm going to be out of town, and I can't change that. But if you can do something in talking to the Edgewood students about the Spartan blue they've decided to use as Lions, that is a continual pet peeve of mine.
Right.
So if you can work on them to get them to come around to get rid of that color, that'd be great.
Thank you, Ms. Stell. I'm hoping to be in board training if I get accepted. If I don't get accepted, then I'll come.
Okay, but that's. We have two other events coming up. We're going to do a sock hop.
Oh, on May 19th, good.
And we're going to do a career day. And I think that's it that we have planned for now. So.
Let me know.
We're really excited.
Thank you so much, Ms. Stell.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the public that would like to address the board during open comment? Okay, we see none. We're going to go ahead and move on the agenda. If we want to take a moment, if any of you parents want to go ahead and go, I know it's Valentine's Day. Your Valentines are probably all waiting for you. Thank you for coming, and thank you for speaking with us. And we're going to try to solve the more global issue.
But you know what? I just saw that movie with George Clooney in it.
Yeah.
I did realize watching the movie.
Yeah,
it's great as me.
Yeah.
Hey. Nice seeing you.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for your flexibility. We appreciate that. Now we can be more intimate. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move forward with our next presentation, which is the pupil transportation report, the evaluation and recommendations for the district. I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Kaplan.
As you know, we have completed a transportation study. Mr. Tim Purvis was the director of transportation at Callaway and provided the leadership in this study. And so I'm going to turn it over to him. You've all had a copy of it to read.
Thank you, Superintendent Kaplan, Madam Board, and members of the board and staff. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, I was sitting here listening to these students, and it's ironic how small the world is. About 26 years ago, I was a college student sitting in a Sunny Hills High School bus from the Fullerton Union High School District, where I worked going through college, as we got our tails kicked in football by West Covina.
Well, I think we have your bus. I think we have the bus.
You have one out there that you might. Thank you very much. You have a report in front of you this morning. It's heavy laden in data. I'm going to hit the high points of that. I'm happy to go through individual findings if I don't if there's interest in some of those that I don't touch upon tonight. I want to make sure though I hit the top 13, what we consider the most major findings in the report for recommendations. Before I kick off, though, I want to take a moment and introduce myself and my two colleagues with me, but to recognize, and having performed close to 92 independent studies with the Fiscal Crisis Management Assistance Team, FCMAC, that's the state's oversight body when a district goes into a loan situation. But most of what they do are management assistance. It's not the more drier there. But having done, you know, close to 80 of those and then the additional and independent studies and a few for School Services of California, sometimes when we're asked in for many different reasons. In the case of West Covina, in December, when I was contacted by your chief business official, Don Bastian, what struck us immediately was the transparency of the district. And there's so many good things going on here. But sometimes when you bring in folks from outside the box, it's like my own operation, we see things a little bit differently. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. But I want to recognize your superintendent, Deborah Kaplan, your chief business official, Don Bastian, your operations director, Grace Gardner, for welcoming us into the district, the staff that spent 3 days with us, allowing us to pick at their brains and interview them and the information that they shared with us. So without further ado, a little bit about myself, about 27 years in the business. I'm currently the Director of Transportation for Poway Unified School District. We're a large suburban school district in North San Diego County of about 34,000 students of more interest to you. We have a transportation system where we're moving about 3,500 students a day. We take care of close to 600 vehicles, 154 or so of which our school buses. We're most noted in transportation. Unfortunately, we're the district that sued the Department of Education on the parent fee program. We had hopes to have lost that case, but we won it, and the state Supreme Court deemed home to school not part of the academic requirement to get a student into a classroom, not what we were going after. But as a result, we do have a fairly successful, in our demographics, ability to bring in about $1.5 million dollars a year that helps us offset our encroachment. I've consulted for, as Mr. Laxon here, and let me introduce these two gentlemen really quick. Mr. Larry Laxon, who aided me in the phase one part of the project. Mr. Laxon has close to 38 years in the transportation field, having been director at a large high school district in San Diego County, Sweetwater, as well as the last 16 years before he moved out and retired with the Cajon Valley School District. He's also been the past president of the California Association of School Transportation Officials. Mr. Phil Medved actually works for me at Poway Unified, my vehicle maintenance supervisor for over 18 years, and over 25 years in the vehicle maintenance field, heavy-duty diesel mechanics and what have you. So we have a lot of experience in front of you is what I'm trying to convey here. As I said, a lot of independent projects done over the years. I'm also an online instructor with the USC Rossier School of Education for the Business Certificate Program. In December, Mrs. Bastin contacted us and asked us to take a look at your transportation program. What came from that in our original contract that the board had before you a couple of months ago was about 2.5 pages of a very delineated scope project, one of the larger ones, I might say. I've broken that down for ease of conversation tonight into the 8 major sections, and I'll go in order that the report falls in. Those 8 major areas are: review the district's transportation program, organization structure, and staffing model; conduct an analysis of the district's school bus routing methodology; assess the district's tiered school bus schedule to determine if greater efficiency in transportation services might be achieved; study the district's driver contract model and suggestions if need be; examine the district's vehicle maintenance program to assure the best practices and legal requirements are in place; evaluate the district's transportation program fiscal accountability based on the state TRAN report. If you're not familiar with the state TRAN report, it's in essence the official report the district uses to report their expenses to the Department of Finance, California Department of Ed. Review the district's driver and safety practices, and provide an opinion on the district's compressed natural gas CNG fueling infrastructure, since you have some challenges there right now. And excuse me if I'm going fast here. I just want to make sure I get to these recommendations for you. Slow me up if I need to. The first section of the report, organizational structure and staffing. And by the way, the first part of the report, if you haven't had a chance to go through it yet, is an executive summary. It's a quick way of kind of reviewing the top points of the report. We'll deal with findings first, and then I'll go to the recommendations as such and take questions. The district's transportation program is designed within a maintenance operations and transportation, or MOT, model. This is very typical, very usual. We wouldn't recommend anything else for the district. Typically, if a program is 20 routes or fewer, it's in such a model. A little bit of a difference here, though, is the program is split in supervision, with the operations portion under one administrative level director, supervisor, and the vehicle maintenance under another. There's an organizational chart within your book on page 10. It delineates kind of the business services section and gets down specifically to what we're talking about here. But in essence, you have two major functions within a transportation department, that of operations. And I call that all the daily stuff, the routing, the trip scheduling, the supervision of drivers, what happens day in and day out. And then you have the vehicle maintenance section that's responsible for the school buses and all the legal requirements and best practices that go with that, but also have the responsibility of the district's entire maintenance fleet. We typically see that. Matter of fact, I can probably count on one hand the times we've seen it separated like that, and sometimes it can lead to some endemic problems, and we've seen some of those challenges here, we believe. The separation of the two main functions within transportation program is causing some organization dysfunction, simply put. Upon commencement of the study, the district had 14 school bus drivers. I wanted to point this out in routes because literally as we were coming in December, there had been a resignation, I believe, in the district condensed down to 13, which was wise. There'll be some further efficiencies that the board can consider, but you'll see some of our number comparisons. We'll use 14 routes and drivers, and that's why I wanted to point that out.
Two of the district's drivers have additional assigned duties as lead worker driver and driver instructor. You're going to hear me later in the report refer to the lead worker driver because that's a very, very critical position, especially in a smaller operation where you don't have tiered or levels of supervision, because that's the individual that often controls and has the knowledge in their head of what the daily routes are, how to do quick coverage. If a field trip comes in late from a school, they're really the go-to person. They're the driver's best friend. And that individual usually is leaned on heavily by the administrator and or the supervisor. The district does not employ substitute school bus drivers permanently. It's not to say you don't have them. You just have them in different capacities, such as that lead driver or the consolidation of routes. You just don't have permanent positions out there titled a substitute bus driver. So that's a bit of a problem for you if you don't have another design to cover routes because there's some high absenteeism within your program currently. The district is impacted by high absenteeism of 20 to 30% daily. Mm-hmm. I believe one of the days we were out here prior to the winter break, it was well over 60%. It was staggering. I've been in a lot of transportation organizations, and I don't know how you pull that off, literally. Bus routes often run late for student pickup and drop off as a result. The lead worker driver often substitutes driving a route. Why is that important? Well, if he's out there driving a route, he's not in there making some of the decisions that need to be made for other route coverage issues. Parent calls coming into the department. If there's not a backup individual to take this, the schools start calling in regarding trip issues, cancellations due to the weather, etc. The person can't be two places at one time, certainly addressing these items from a bus if they're driving it. The lead worker driver works the morning shift, leaving the afternoon without coverage. That's problematic, hugely, for the reasons I've just stated. The transportation operation does not have personnel intimately knowledge about specific routing needs throughout the business day. That relates to the point above, meaning for transportation, their business day is about a two-hour period in early to mid-morning and, again, mid to late afternoon. The middle part slows down and transportation becomes a ghost town. Picks up at those two time periods and into the evening when you have a high school program, as you do. The area routing methodology, which is the next section in your report, the district does not currently utilize industry standard routing software to assist in their routing needs. That's not necessarily a problem. You have 13 routes out there right now, a good scheduler, different word I give to the lead driver that you use here. If they're in a situation where they can devote the time for what we call route optimization to address some of the issues we'll talk about here in a moment, it works. So we're not suggesting that you need to go out and get a fancy routing package. Could it help? Yes, it can. They're not terribly expensive. They're a canned program that you can easily purchase, and it can help you optimize. Not critical, though. Review of the district's bus route indicates a relaxed routing methodology lacking the necessary oversight to assure full optimization of the district's labor and vehicle resources. And I think we've tapped on that a little bit by what I've said about the fact that your lead driver is often out there driving a bus, not doing the things that you probably want them to be doing. Review of three of the district's seven special education routes identified excessive routing time between individual student pickup stops. Three is a large percentage for us to look at in the totality of the number of special ed routes you have. It was evident in all three of those routes that you had a substantial amount of time on many instances between curb-to-curb pickups. Remember, we're talking about special ed here. This is not, you know, an intentional fault of staff by no means. It probably exists because the person overseeing the routing doesn't have the time to go in there and optimize. You'll hear me keep using that word. Tighten up that. When a new special ed child is brought into the system, they're inserted into that space. If people don't methodically have enough time to think about that, they go the next easiest path. Add them on to the end of the route. You add time to the route, and all of a sudden you have a route that's no longer efficient. Optimization of the district special education bus routes could result in the elimination of one special education route with estimated annual savings of $56,000. Something I want to point out to you as I talk about numbers here, I'm very conservative. Is that a problem? Okay. If my CBO were in the audience right now, she would tell you that I'm conservative with numbers. This $56,000 is built upon your own labor cost and benefit cost here.
that figure is conservative because if we believe that we see the potential of, and for instance, a case of an elimination of two routes, I'll go the more conservative role and say in state one. We also had a challenge, we're going to talk in your vehicle maintenance section, of getting to your operational costs. This figure does not have the operational costs built into it. Your labor cost here just to start the bus, in Poway, that's about $62,000. So I know this figure is close on here based on the package that you have. But what I'm saying is there's probably about another 10% that could be added to that for the sheer operational cost of that bus, the fuel, the oil, the wear, the tear, et cetera. The labor's the big piece, though. That is a conservative figure is what I want to point out to you. The district is operating 13 bus routes daily. 6 home-to-school general education routes transporting approximately 900 students, general ed, and 7 special ed routes transporting approximately 110 students. These are your non-county or SELPA students. These are your students in your buses, as needing transportation support as related service through the IEP plan. The district's home-to-school transportation program is predominantly providing service for the elementary students. You do have a small level of service provided to one middle school, quite a distance away.
In violation of board policy.
The district has an adopted school board policy of 3540A and 3541, stipulating a 3/4 mile non-service zone for grades K-3 and a 1 1/2 mile non-zone for grades 4 or 5. I want to talk about this a second, because in the back of your report are a set of maps, and we contemplated on how to best demonstrate this to you, so I'm going to grab two here and point out to you to make sure we depicted this as best as we can, because my wife told me we didn't. They were a bit confusing. The school boundary is identified in yellow, so on any one of those maps, the yellow color in the section is what was provided to us through your district data as the school boundary. Yes.
I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah, that's the same reaction my wife gave me. A 3/4 mile zone is identified in light blue or green. So if you go to that next color out, which is a circle that's either in light blue or green, that's simply the measurement line from the school building in the middle out to that point. Now, as you're looking at these maps, and based on the board policy that we saw, we would not expect to see any school bus stops within that 3/4 mile zone. The reason for that is, according to the board policy we saw, your youngest students, K-3, are transported outside of 3/4 miles. Does that make sense? The next circle out represents from the center, the school facility out, 1.5 miles, meaning no students within that circle that are grades 4 and 5 should be eligible for transportation according to the policy we read. Mm-hmm. So if you look at all these maps, this would suggest to us that no grade 4 or 5 student in the West Covina Unified School District is eligible for home-to-school non-mandated transportation. And then in some cases, we have grades K-3. So the point I want to leave you with is that your bus stops are identified in red here. We wouldn't expect to see any bus stops in this area. So if we look at Cameron Elementary School, I would see that in that depiction, you might have a few students in the upper right sector of the school boundary that are grades K-3 that might be eligible. But the looks of all of those bus stops is they're well within the 3/4 mile. I would suggest you might need a bus stop or two up in that top right area. I'm just going to use Orangewood Elementary because it depicts the example even greater to the point we're going to make. And in that case, I don't believe that that school would have any transportation provided by your board policy. You might have a little segment up there by the 10 freeway in the top right again. Now, a third point in your board policy does call for the recognition of hazard criteria. And we didn't stipulate this in the report, but and I don't say that we agree with this as transportation officials, and you may not as a board, but sadly, the California Department of Ed does not mandate home-to-school transportation. It's a decision of the school board to provide that service. If you do, there's some revenue to supplant back. Not enough to pay for it. On statewide average, it's 45%, and with the almost 20% reduction we've seen categorically over the last 4 years, that statewide average is around 32%. In doing so, what school boards have done across the state is pushed out their eligibility criteria to reduce service, to reduce cost. if you recognize hazard criteria, and I commend you if you do, we couldn't see in your policy what that was. It just allows for it. But if you do, remember it negates your policy and could cause you to bring back. I just want you aware of it. That's all. Any questions on the maps?
Okay. Our hazard criteria is if somebody complains, then we'll pick them up. That's our hazard criteria.
Yeah. Very similar in many districts, Mr. Spence.
So the yellow boundary is what again?
Your yellow boundary represents the school boundary.
The attendance boundary?
Yeah, the attendance boundary. The green or the light blue measures 3/4 mile out, so you would not expect to see any bus stops within that circle. And we pretty much do across the board. The next circle is 1.5 miles. You actually, that's why I said you don't have any grades 4 and 5 students in the district that are eligible by your board policy guideline. Now, you know, why might these bus stops exist? You know, you don't have transportation personnel that are putting these here willingly, I assure you. My guess is, historically, this is a well-established district. You probably had many of these stops that were placed based by state regulation and guideline for safety in place. We can't tell you how many students. We know you're rolling buses into all of your elementaries. We can't tell you how many students per stop, but you're transporting some. My guess is those stops have been there for many, many years, or Mr. Spence, as you just indicated, someone came before the board with a concern and was put into place, and there it stayed. Mr. Cox, did I catch your question there?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. District bell schedule.
We have another question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
On California and West Cove, those aren't the current boundaries, correct?
California, yeah, every boundary located or identified should be based on the data we receive, the current boundary for the school.
Because so. One's a K through, West Cove's a K-2, and the California's...
Oh, now as far as the grade, I understand what
and
you're
so
saying.
So then they combine those two schools, so really their boundaries should...
That's a very good point. So the K-5 are divided between the two sites, so you'd want to overlay the two. You're going to have some transportation service there, I can tell, just by the sheer distance they would pull into. And we can, Don, we can do that for you very easily.
Well, and it does show routes well outside the area, and I think that's because of the overlay. It doesn't.
Yeah. That would explain, too, I'm glad you pointed that out, because when we at one point we had your student data depicted on the map. There was just no need to show that. But on these sites, we saw a lot of students in that outlying area, and that would explain why.
Okay.
Because of the large attendance zone. The next area, major area of the report, is the district bell schedule. And before we go here, this is one of those very sensitive items. It's like adjusting boundaries. Most school boards don't want to talk about bell schedules. First of all, you need to understand the district has a very good tiered, three-tiered bell schedule now. Matter of fact, we typically don't see it. Typically, we see two tiers. Many districts with transportation programs that are transporting 30, 40, 50% of the population, this is usually a much larger finding in this area. Our only point in this area is that by adjusting, and there's no one way of doing this. I want to stress that. We gave you an example of just one adjustment, and believe me, all my years in front of a board talking about bell schedules in my own district, I can be run out of a room real quick. We're just pointing out that with an adjustment at three schools, what might seem minor to us probably is not to those communities whatsoever. We're just showing that there is a possibility of, because of what we've identified in your board criteria eligibility, conservatively, you could reduce 1 to 2 routes totaling, you know, 56,000 to 112. That's all we're wanting to point out here. Further adjustment in the bell schedule could get you at that a little bit more easily.
And every time you cite a number of savings, it's really, you know, the difference between the state rate. That's the total figure, not what we would save in actuality because of state reimbursements.
Correct. Correct. You just want to make sure that you keep your state.
It's really like half of that.
Yes. You want to keep your state expense for home to school at whatever the level is. I can already tell you, though, having looked at your reimbursement formulas, is very conservative here. that's not going to be a worry for you. And in one regards, and we're digressing from the report a little bit, but it's important. In your area of special ed, you're transporting by IEP many non-orthopedically impaired or severely emotionally disturbed, that if you ever got to the point that you're reducing home to school to the point that you were taking the big buses off the road, many of those students you can report on the 7230 side of the sheet and protect that. And up until last Friday, that probably wouldn't have even been an issue because they were taking it all from us. But as of last Friday, they've reinstated it at least for the current year. That was the SB 81 issue. I hit a lot of these points already. You have a three-tiered staggered schedule. I've talked about the example. Yes, ma'am.
A question about the – I noticed that the changes, you're looking at changing West Cove. Is one of the ones recommended for change, but West Cove and California are schools that are tied. If you want to look at the whole span, K through 6, those two schools split.
Uh-huh.
So my question for our staff would be, is that even doable with that, since those two schools bus to each other? You know, so if your homeschool's West Cove, you could be bused from California to West Cove and walk home. So could we even do that?
You know, I want to be very cautious here. This specific example was made through the discussion of a couple of your transportation personnel. When I started looking at it, I look regionally for schools, and I look at how the Bell schedule is staggered, and then I look at the existing routing of where one bus feeds to another that feeds to another. That's how we backed into these sites, but I'll be the first to tell you, again, this was one topical look at this. I think what I'm hearing you say, because of the split population for the two sites, they need to be looked at together.
Right.
And I'm thinking that's what the personnel did when I spoke with them on that, but I'd want that verified, Don.
Well, because they have a start time at 7:35, and then they want to change West Coast start time to 8:45. I mean, I think that would be an issue.
And I think this was one example. We didn't look at every other school adoption. I think we just took it that if we look at our Bell schedule, that not necessarily this is an example. And I hear what you're saying in terms of this one, but if we look at all of our schools, it looks the Bell schedule as a possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a nicely tiered schedule now. Don't get me wrong. We just believe there might be some adjustments that can be made in there. I don't want you to walk away believing that this is the one and only possibility whatsoever.
Well, and personally, I wouldn't mind Holland Crest and West Covina High School having more than a minute apart on their dismissals, because I have to go pick up at both of those schools. That's just a personal.
Yeah. Well, believe me, you could fill this boardroom with pros and cons to every example we could bring up. And again, the 56 to 112, Mr. Spence has indicated, again, that's based on one to two routes. Those are labor and benefit cost only, not operational cost of the bus. Your driver contract time. The district employs school bus drivers under a model of guaranteed contract time. Not unusual. It's pretty much a 50-50 split. Myself and managing two programs, when I was with the high school district over the hill here, we did the exact same thing. And we did it for the reasons I suspect historically West Covina got into it. And it's mainly driven by athletics and the high volume of trips that are needed. So to retain staff in a competitive area, which you're in, you put a guaranteed model in there. Right now, I'm in a minute-by-minute model. In other words, my drivers, 142 of them, will bid specifically on a contract, and then we deal with the extra work. There are pros and cons to both. This is not unusual. Matter of fact, this is somewhat of an easier model, but it takes very close supervision. Managed efficiently, the model can be very beneficial for the reasons I've stated, especially because of your high volume of trips. All current driving staff are guaranteed 8, 7, or 6 hours daily. And there's a table on page 16. Take the time to study that, because what is a bit unusual here is the richness of the guaranteed contracts. You need to probably look at those, or look at how you're using that contract time to make sure you're getting the biggest bang for your buck, because it does benefit your staff a great deal. Based on the district's original 14 school bus, really 13 now, the total route pre-trip daily document tabulation and closeout. And all I'm saying there is the stuff that is involved for the route itself equals 73.25 hours daily. It's not too bad, really, which equates to 9.15 full-time equivalents. Based on the district's guaranteed time contract model at the time we visited the district, the total driver daily contracts are approximately 90 hours, in excess of 16.75 hours daily, equaling over 2 FTE. I'll be honest with you. We had to calculate this at three times. I would have expected somewhere between 1 FTE and 1.5 for a district of this size for the number of athletic programs you have. This is a rich program, so you need to make sure that that non-driving time, however it's arranged with your bargaining unit and your employees, and from looks at your bargaining unit contract, you can apply this time very easily to your what we call non-driving assignments, really driving assignments, but it's their non-route assignments. That's the field trips and what have you. And you do that by banking the time. Calculated on the district's current pay scale for each driver and based upon the 180 contract days, the district is spending approximately $61,302 annually to support additional guaranteed time for their driving staff beyond that needed to perform their assigned school bus routes and related work. The guaranteed time contract model, again, is beneficial, but it takes an individual in transportation that's not out driving a bus to be effectively taking in those athletic schedules and elementary field trip schedules and assigning it to those drivers that have the non-driving time a week or two in advance. In my case, we want all the athletic schedules a season in advance. We want to see all the field trips and what have you a minimum of 2 to 3 weeks. Are there exceptions to that? Absolutely. Foul weather, what have you. But it's really so you can effectively use this, the driving staff here, and not roll over into additional time or overtime with staff. The guaranteed contract time model requires daily supervision. I've covered that. The lead driver worker is not on assignment during the second half of the program day to aid in the coordination of the trip assignments. I brought this up once. I want to reiterate it again because if that individual is working the morning hours and trying to get working very hard and trying to cover routes for often and what have you, and then leaving half day, is not leaving anyone in the transportation program intimately familiar with the way the puzzle's put together, mm-hmm. the daily routes, the trip coverage, what have you. So when something out of the norm happens, people do their very best to support kids and cover it, but it might not be done in the most efficient manner. District vehicle maintenance. This is probably the heaviest area of the report, and I would say that you need to draw your immediate attentions, and you are, to this area. The district vehicle maintenance duties are managed separately from the district. Transportation operations section. I think a lot of the challenges you're faced with currently are endemic to the separation there under two different levels of supervision. Complete vehicle maintenance documentation was found to be non-existent. That's extremely serious. The 45-day 3,000-mile Title 13 required school bus safety inspections were documented. I'm sorry to inform you, some of that's probably in question to the level of thoroughness. The district has a sufficient electronic vehicle maintenance software package. Matter of fact, you have one of the nicer ones in the industry. You're paying a lot of money for that annually. It's not being used. The vehicle maintenance shop and inventory areas lack general sufficient housekeeping and are disorganized and rendering in some space unusable. There's some images we put into the report. And by the way, you guys have done a nice job with your shop. I wish I had it. I would need about three more bays, but I wish I had it. It's very modern. It's equipped well. You've spent a lot of money in the tooling of that shop, and it's very sufficient for what you need to do. So nice job. Evidence of a documented district vehicle maintenance program delineating inspection types by mileage was not evident. Title 13 tells us what we must do in inspecting a school bus every 3,000 miles or 45 days. In your case, it's always going to be the days that hit because you put on very little mileage. That's a good thing from cost perspective. Title 13 also requires, though, that you have a preventative maintenance schedule in place. It doesn't tell you what that preventative maintenance schedule is, but it's often, you know, an A check, which is your safety check, or the 45-day check, a B check, and a C check. And like your own car, think of that as the, beyond the oil change, think of that as a 60,000, the 90,000, the 120,000-mile checkup. And you're going to catch things at that time before they fail and cause a vehicle prematurely to be catastrophic and you lose it or you age it before its time. It is difficult to calculate your vehicle cost per mile as a result of the insufficient cost tracking. We had no records to go to look at that. That's why when we're looking at your route cost, everything's based on labor and benefit, and we couldn't put an operational cost in there.
But you estimated it being an extra 10%.
Yeah, roughly. And again, I always go on the conservative side of that, but yes. Currently, cost tracking by program resource is done through the district's finance staff and assigning a percentage of work program types, home to school, special ed, and district. This is not unusual for a district this size. The transportation personnel usually don't have necessarily the finance skills behind them to follow this concept, and we lived with that up to about 5 or 6 years ago. We can't afford to do business that way anymore. So what would happen is the finance folks would simply look at the total mileage of the department driven and say, okay, 30% of it was home to school, 40% of it was special ed, and the rest was other fleet. Well, when you're making decisions on can we afford home to school, you need to know exactly what home to school is costing you. Case in point, I've had to put a price on it in Poway right now. A third of my salary is charged off to resource, 7230. A part of me is charged off to 7240 special ed. A part of me to district support fleet. Well, if you do away with home to school, am I going to go away? I hope not in our case. So the expense goes up in special ed and district other support fleet because it eliminates. You can track that very easily. A vehicle maintenance person, if he's buying a filter for a large bus, he stamps it with an account code that Don wants. If that same filter is going on a special ed bus, it's stamped there. The finance folks can track it. You do the same way with your labor. You charge your special ed folks off to the 7240 or your regular ed to 7230, et cetera. The district has 18 operational school buses. We were asked, this is the last part of the maintenance section, we were asked to look at your fleet. Certainly not critical, but it's going to need your attention. And these are tough times to be looking at these items, I realize. 13 of the district school buses are more than 10 years old, with two units more than 28 years of age. Usually by percentage, we'll see something greater than that, though. The average mileage on the district school bus fleet is 87,855, with two units nearing 150,000 and one unit in excess of 225,000 miles. There's probably two units you need to take a look at out there. What's saving you here is that you put on very low mileage in this district. I think annually on average, I have it here in a moment by a vehicle, it's less than 8,000. Of the 18 buses, only two units are newer than 2006 model year. As documented on your state TRAN, there it is. You're traveling over 115,000 miles annually, which is representing about an 8,236 miles per operational vehicle. It's probably less than your home to school and about a third greater if you looked at it by fleet on your special ed. We just, again, couldn't look at it that way because that documentation's not existent. The financial analysis piece, really, we've tapped upon it up to this point. It was really taking a look at your state TRAN report and looking at how you're populating that. It looked a bit askew to us, but again, it's because averages were taken to populate the home to school 7230 side versus the special ed 7240 side. The only way of fixing that is if you're identifying it back at when the repair is actually being done and the labor's being spent. I've kind of hit those points, so I'll go through there. Electronic tracking of operational costs within the transportation vehicle maintenance section is essentially non-existent. You have the tools to do that now. You just need to use them, and that's your vehicle maintenance program and starting to document what you've begun doing. Driver safety and training, your records look good. The district employs a CDE-certified instructor. He's a bus driver for you as well. You're not in the business of hiring non-school bus drivers from what the records look like to us. When you're hiring licensed school bus drivers, so your job is to keep them certified annually, meaning the state Department of Ed requirements of a minimum of 10 hours of in-service annually, what have you. I did personally touch each one of those records and look at them, and they were all in order in December when we took a look at that. Compressed natural gas infrastructure. You're blessed to be in the South Coast Air Quality Management District. That's a good thing. You have more money than the rest of us in the state, and you've made use of that generally from what we see. Very nice infrastructure out there, and it lived a good life for you. It died. And essentially, you need to replace it. You have a almost 50% of your fleet is CNG fueled. That's only going to grow. It's not going to lessen. There's a mandate in the South Coast AQMD that unless you can prove negativity on resource, in other words, special ed equipment, you can't carry enough fuel on board for the distance you go. And I'm not even sure you could do that in this district. That's about the only way around that mandate. So what you buy for certain on the large bus side is going to be CNG, and you're probably going to see the move on the small bus side too. That's a large percentage, by the way, total fleet. You've done a good job there. The district CNG compressor is an automated fueling system. With CNG, it's a compressed natural gas. You want to fill slow. And by fueling slow, like over the course of the night, you get a true fill. If you fast fill it, it shows full, but you don't truly have a complete full tank, for lack of a better term. So there's two pieces to this. You have the automated system in place. We fear that it might not be still have the connectivity because of its age to a new compressor station that's in there. But the two go hand in hand. They really do. Otherwise, you're going to spend the money having someone fuel the bus and probably more often. You're utilizing currently an underrated portable compressor system, and you're on limited time there. That's costing you about $1,400 a month. You do have a $40,000 grant in hand, I believe, to apply toward probably what's close between an $80,000 to $100,000 bill. Hopefully there could be some Carl Moyer funds in the spring here you could apply for. Again, you're in a better position than most districts for the area of CNG infrastructure needs. There are 27 recommendations in the report, but for the sake of the time, I'm going to tap upon, unless you want more, 13 of the greatest ones. And they fall at the end of each section after the findings piece. One, we suggest that you align all functions of your transportation program under one administrative level director and one single supervisor within your MOT organization model for consistency. The mechanics need to be talking with the supervisor who's talking with the driver. It's a team approach when you inspect a bus. It's not just about the mechanics. It's about the driver doing their daily pre-trip and the connectivity between the two and what the repairs are needed, et cetera. It's also a huge budget control piece. We'd suggest that you reclassify your lead worker driver position by creating a split in the position, allowing for coverage during both the AM and PM periods. This is not unusual. Matter of fact, what's unusual is that the personnel currently fulfilling that is working a straight 8-hour shift and out in the bus driving, and that's because of the absenteeism rate currently in the district, but that individual's not here at the critical part of the day and also the part of the day where most of your activity trips are being done. Consider the benefits derived by incorporating an additional transportation supervisor position that has specific student transportation experience and knowledge of best practices under the MOT model. This is a sensitive area, and we'd suggest that maybe at looking at other suggested reductions in the transportation budget, it might allow you to address this. But from a practicality standpoint, because you're a small program and you're in an MOT model, which makes sense, and you have an efficient operations type person, but honestly has limited knowledge of the very specialized needs of student transportation, there's no other person left there. There's no other person left there. And I think had there been someone with that type of knowledge, you might not have been faced with some of the challenge in vehicle maintenance that you are currently. Review the District 7 special education bus routes for greater optimization. Examine the possibility of such and consolidating one special ed route for an operational savings of $56,000. Remember I talked about optimization in your routes? This is an easy achievement. If I can sit down from the outside, I'm in the business, and look and see, you know, 7 minutes to get where I should have been able to get in 2 minutes from point A to point B, and we see that repeatedly, you should be able to get to this consolidation conservatively. Examine all district school bus stops to assure that they are positioned within the eligibility areas of the home-to-school student transportation as identified in your own board policy. That's looking more at making sure that policy is what you all want. If those stops are what they appear to be, are they there for hazardous conditions that you recognize? And if so, you probably should develop some criteria for recognizing them, if that's the board's choice. But if not, there's probably some areas for efficiency there that can total into one route, conservatively, if not two. Consider greater separation and alteration of the current master bell schedule, the three elementary tiered times. Remember, this is already a nicely tiered schedule, but if you were forced into a corner in your operational cost, you could look in this area. Review the amount of non-driving guaranteed time currently being paid to assess the need for extra transportation work for a potential annual savings of $26,000. I took that conservatively. We're not saying delete your guaranteed time model. We're saying look at the amount of time you're guaranteeing, and is that in excess to what you need for home for activity trips. Immediately reinstitute the use of the district vehicle maintenance software program. Easily done. Implement a cost tracking process to identify and repair a cost for parts, labor, what have you. I spoke about that. Easily done. Design a school bus replacement schedule, prioritizing highest to oldest vehicle for replacement. You may not have money. You should have a schedule in place. Money can drop instantly. It's happened in the past, not in the last few years, but it has happened in the past. But no, everyone be familiar. You got a bus or two out there you need to be looking at. Solicit possible additional funding from the local air quality board. Again, you're in the best board in the state to do that. There are some Carl Moyer funds coming available you might be able to get access to. And create a request for proposal for your CNG compressor needs. That's probably going to be close to $100,000 investment. Thank you for your patience. That was a long presentation, but I'll entertain questions and clarification.
Okay. Mr. Cox, do you have any questions?
Well, just a couple comments quickly. First of all, thank you, Mrs. Kaplan, Mrs. Bastian, for recognition of the importance of having this study done. Mr. Purvis, again, thank you for you and your team. Very thorough. To be quite honest with you, quite shocking, or at least my first blush at reading this was really quite overwhelming, especially having been in the district as long as I have. And, you know, we've addressed some of these problems that you've talked about over the years and been given some assurances that things were going to be taking place. It doesn't sound like those things were taken addressed and addressed properly. It does concern me when, you know, we're dealing with areas here that deal, you know, when we deal with the education side, we're dealing with, obviously, student achievement and that sort of thing. In your side, we're dealing with student lives. And, you know, so when maintenance schedules aren't adhered to, when people don't care enough about even their work areas just to keep it clean and orderly so that we can maintain vehicles on an orderly basis, you know, why people that are working in this district, in this department, haven't seen and brought these attention, if not to their media, to supervisors, on up and seeing that we need these. I mean, these people work on these things on a daily basis, whether it's the mechanics or the drivers. You know, my brakes are squeaking, you know, and if my immediate supervisor is not going to take care of this, then doggone it, somebody else needs to be taking care of this and looking into it very carefully. So, you know, to be honest with you, it was frightening to see this. And, you know, I know we have to deal with, you know, what do we call it, alternative uses of scarce resources as we deal not only with transportation, but our overall budget and what we're going to do. It does make us kind of look very seriously at, you know, whether or not we want to be experts in the education field or whether or not we want to be experts in the transportation area. You know, we're not an LAUSD. We're not a Long Beach. We're not a huge district. We're not a Poway. And whereas a lot of these things are gosh, it's been 30 years since I went to school at San Diego State. So, you know, and Poway was this place that was way up north and in the boonies.
Horse country.
Yeah, and so that's my recollection of that. But it is still way spread out. And I know the governor has addressed some of these issues transportation-wide throughout the state, taking money taking money out of transportation, not putting it back into transportation. But it's to fund these areas where they are rural areas, and kids have to travel longer distances, and there aren't opportunities for carpooling and things of that nature. Well, here we're a little bitty district, you know, with fairly close, confined areas, and we're trying to facilitate an area, you know, that should be you know, I mean, shoot, these days, I mean, we used to ride bikes to schools, and now we, you know, mom and dad take us to school, so or we carpool and that sort of thing. So it's a time that we're going to have to do some really serious inflections as to whether or not we want to continue in the transportation business. That's all.
Thank you. Ms. Poulos?
It looked like we stopped using according to the report, the vehicle maintenance software system right around the first fire, and then it continued after the second fire. And I don't think it's a question for you because you weren't here, but was it not accessible? Was there a problem with...
They weren't here either.
May I? Yeah. I do have some info. I asked the same question. It was accessible. There were two computers in the area to access it from, based on what we viewed and what we were told by personnel. We identified that it was the stoppage was about that time, only because we saw little evidence after the first major fire. So whether there was regular usage stopped significantly before, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But you did have access to it. There was a thought that the access usage license wasn't current. It is current. The district's been paying that. It was verified. So it's in place.
And then is it difficult to use? I mean, did the people who are supposed to be inputting it know how to use it and just didn't use the program, or was that a stumbling block?
I would be hard-pressed, because I don't know the level of expertise with technology, but based on the electronic equipment I saw in the vehicle maintenance garage, I would say that the expertise was there. Hard to use. The particular system is one of the more sophisticated. I wouldn't say it was hard to use. And then thirdly, there was evidence of it being used, and then it stopped.
And then we saw the pictures of, for lack of a better word, the disarray in the maintenance area. But was that because they haven't had enough time to re-put, because of the two fires, to get it back organized, and there was never a specific time for them to be able to do that, or we don't know?
I couldn't answer that specifically. It's about an 11-month period. I've been an administrator in two large programs for a good majority of my career. Twice, we've emptied five garage bays, repainted, resealed, and moved back in and did it in 48 hours.
Okay.
It's not like they were busy repairing things or entering stuff into the computer. So, I mean,
it would take time, yes, ma'am, because, you know, the equipment that's being brought in and what have you. I can only assess it when we walked in there. Things were in place. They just weren't arranged.
Well, so when you were showing us the pictures, I thought if the boxes weren't there, it might have been able to accommodate another bus, small bus, or another vehicle to be maintained or worked on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And let me tell you what I do. And in fact, my colleagues laugh at me. I go in an inventory parts room and I look for dust. Because if there's a lot of dust, you're stocking too much and you're not using it, or you're stocking things you shouldn't. And the latter both are true in your case. You had a value in parts greater than we do for the size we are, okay? That's a bit unusual. And I'm simplifying that because you had some high-priced items. But when I look out in at least the short vehicle maintenance bay, those look to be like long-term storaged items. Again, I can't explain the reasons for that, but it's not as if they're moving boxes waiting to be unpacked is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't tell by the picture.
Yeah, did my best there.
Oh, it was a great job. It gave me an idea of what it looked like. That's all I had.
Okay.
I'd like to respond to Mr. Cox here. So there's some shining light here. I hear what you're saying loud and clear. And a lot of times when organizations get to this point, the decision is maybe we're educating kids. Maybe we can't afford to be transporting home to school. You're moving only 900 of your kids. And whether or not all of them should be on your buses, I don't know. But I'm sure a good number of them need transportation services. You do have some, and hopefully it's going to continue several years ahead, but at least we know for 1 year some funding coming in. But what I see here is an opportunity to get at some efficiencies. that can allow you to do some in-house cleaning without additional monies being spent. I also see that there's a need for on-the-ground supervision, someone that's walking the lot when the drivers are pre-tripping, someone that's walking through the garage and assessing what the level of work order needs are for the day and communicating that to the administrative director, Grace, who's controlling an overall budget for control. And I think if some things are tightened up, and I look at your driver contract time, you're very generous and the total contract time given here. And it's a great model. It's the easier model of the two to manage. Maybe it's too generous right now. I don't know, but that needs to be assessed. There's some monies to be had in here. So I don't see that there's a huge need for additional monies beyond what you poor folks have had to do already pouring into the department. You'll get through these times. You're making the right choices. Lastly, I want to remind the entire board that someone on this staff had the insight because of a situation to say, you know, we need to have someone take a look from the outside and be thankful for that. It's not after the fact, because so often it's after a wheel or an axle or something has come off a bus. So.
Again, I'm very grateful for that. Oh, it really becomes a question of if we're dealing with that issue with, okay, 900 kids need to be transported, well, maybe there are people that are better experts at doing exactly what you're doing and doing it much more efficiently with far greater knowledge that doesn't involve our internal usage of that. That's all I want to explore. That, and if there are, then we'll make that decision again.
Mr. Spence.
I agree with what you just said. I mean, I think we're truly blessed as a district that, you know, we found out a lot of stuff before something bad happened. You know, because, you know, to me, some of the things that went back there were nothing more than criminal, immoral, and there were other people that were negligent and not reporting it, you know, higher up, you know, from my point of view, and literally endangering, you know, kids' lives. And, you know, to me, I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't believe it when she was, you know, doing that. I just could not believe it. But that said, you know, back to this issue of transportation, I mean, you know where I am on transportation. I've had this position for a long time. I think we divert in this school district too much money to homeschool transportation. We're not a rural district. We're not a big district. I had the misfortune of living in El Cajon for a year. And, you know, I'm familiar with East County. And, you know, there are places out there where you're going to have to bus. You know, Hammett, you're going to have to bus that school district. I get that. And, you know, that's a different situation. Here, we bus 900 kids. Many of them in violation of board policy. We don't use eligibility. If you go to a bus stop, you'll see people parked in their cars waiting for their kid to get on the bus, and they won't let them stand out at the bus stop on a rainy day because they're just driving to school. And so, you know, and to me, because we have schools all around, and we already have a number of kids who, through different choices, go to different schools. To me, I think we're just diverting money out of our general fund to subsidize the homeschool transportation. Now, especially we got to do. And I get that, you know, and that's fine. But, you know, to me, I've been for eliminating homeschool transportation since I've been on this board. And, you know, I just can't see how we can keep diverting those resources in this size of district for such a small number of kids. That's kind of my problem. So, I mean, your efficiencies are all fine, and I don't have a problem, you know, looking at them. But, you know, we willfully, many times I've brought up our board policies that we willfully ignore, because it's easier than to enforce them. And I think that number of 900 goes down quite a bit, actually, if you start enforcing our board policies, let alone, and then you have to justify that as well. At least that's, I mean, that's just my end perspective on that part.
Of our 131 routes, only 31 of them are home to school.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a little secret, because you guys are in the same boat kind of that we are. You have a high number of athletic trips. You are performing those athletic trips at about one-third to one-half the cost of the charters in the area. In Poway, our best kept secret is we're an encroachment of about 800,000. We do have those two sources of revenue, but we know that we can't dip down much below 28 home to school, and we're going to subsidize that because we need those drivers here that I can pull off a shelf, so I might as well do something with them, because when I do over 3,300 field trips and I'm doing 95% of them, I'm doing those at about half the cost. It's not kind of the same situation you're in here. You might, as you review your efficiencies here, look at what level of home to school you feel that you can support. You're going to have some contribution if you do from the general, from the looks of your revenue, based on, I think, Grace, it was over 1,000 field trips done here annually, around 1,200. My number may be off there. Because it benefits you a great deal. You're in a very competitive market with the districts around you that are fighting for those charters during football season, during basketball season, wrestling, et cetera.
You know, we also have the issue of, I understand what you're saying, but I don't think we've actually, we have the capital cost, potential upcoming capital cost as well. And that's the other aspect that we haven't really talked about is, buses don't come cheap.
Nope.
And, they don't. I've bought some, and, some of them were here before I got here. But, they're not cheap, and that becomes an issue, too. In addition to the ongoing operational labor, et cetera. All that has to be weighed.
Yes, certainly. It seems daunting right now. I am glad
you came in. I'm glad our staff was very transparent about it, because I also know, in a lot of government agencies, people would just try to cover their CYA instead of deal with the problem. And, we dealt with the problem, as just upsetting as it was, I think the whole board.
I understand.
Tim, could you just talk about the CHP, because the board has asked us about that?
Sure. Not a problem. The California Highway Patrol Motor Carrier Division is responsible for all aspects of the school bus as it's a school bus. So that means its design, and it means the driver and how the driver's certified, trained, and upkeep of that training, as well as the maintenance. School buses in California are required to be inspected annually. You really get into a 13th month, but once annually. And really all that means, I wouldn't want you to think that means your fleet is always safe when the California Highway Patrol inspects it. It just means, theoretically anyway, that at that moment, space, and time, when Motor Carrier was out here on that day, that bus met several hundred conditions of safety, and it signed off. At the same time, Motor Carrier is looking at your terminal. Things such as your 45-day, 3,000-mile safety checks to make sure they're in order and logically understood to be within that time frame. They're looking to see if a preventative maintenance schedule is in place. They don't gauge how thorough it is, but that one should be in place. They're also looking at your school bus driver training records. Retention, your random test, pre-employment test, which is probably an HR function, so they'll visit your HR folks unless that's done through the transportation department. And then, again, in addition to that, then annually they'll be coming out throughout the year. For instance, you have two buses coming up for their annual inspection, and the carrier will be here on the 28th of this month to take a look. What the assurances that should be able to give the board is that there's an outside governmental entity that is taking a look to making sure your terminal is meeting the basic requirements and that your buses are. I wasn't sure how far you wanted me to go. Okay. Superintendent Kaplan's asked me to contact your motor carrier, which I've done. I contact your motor carrier specialist 3, which is like 3 levels up the food chain, the boss of the boss of the individual that's responsible in this area, and simply informed that individual where the district was at this time and what they were doing to assure student safety. And we delineated that very, very specifically, to the point that the district on its own accord, not at direction, did a school bus safety check of every one of their school buses. In the course of doing that, we had over 50% of the fleet red tagged because of major violations. As a result of that, a supplementary transportation provider had to be brought in for 3 or 4 days to assist the district in meeting its basic transportation needs. And that we were working earnestly through Mr. Medved to get the beginning of vehicle history folders begun. But, of course, they won't be truly vehicle history folders because they start at this point in time. It took a little while to get a response back from the motor carrier, but I did speak with the specific inspecting carrier last week and let him know again what I just stated and what our goal was, and that our thought now was we needed to get him out here to look at the next two and vehicles that are soon coming up, and hopefully those will go through just fine. We expect they will on the 28th with the efforts that have been put into place. Oh, yes, excuse me. Yeah, Mr. Medved and I both will be here on the 28th.
They would have gone through it anyways, though.
Beg your pardon?
It would have gone through the inspection fine anyways, based on their past conduct.
Well, sure. Your superintendent is the first in my career. We've had situations where we've had less than desirable findings in vehicle maintenance, and sometimes maybe they've caused us to look at the external entity and, you know, where were they on this. I don't think I've ever been asked. I've been asked by superintendents why, but I've never been directed to contact and inform. So, I think the statement that was shared with me by Dawn Bastin, and she's absolutely right, as I echoed it myself. If I woke up and saw that a child in a neighboring district was injured on a bus due to faulty equipment and had some of these same conditions that weren't noticed, we'd all have to live with ourselves. I think you're in a good place with motor carrier right now. I do.
Okay. Are there any further questions? Thank you very much. This was an excellent report, a thorough report. We appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure.
Not the
Thank
kind
you.
Of findings that we want to see, but we're going to move to a better place. Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, you're better today than you were a few weeks ago.
Yes, thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Can we take a quick little 5-minute break and then move forward? Make it a 3-minute break so we can just hurry back. Thank you.